Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Are we Tuesday?
I think it's still Tuesday.
I'm going to go with Tuesday, Jeff Lagerman.
I'm here. It's
hey,
Tuesday.
Loggie. Why are you late, man? We had to wait on you.
Wait.
You know, we needed. We're going to start 20 minutes ago. We said Lagerman's not here.
No.
I didn't see him, Tony, with the camouflage shirt on.
I was here 15 minutes early. You just didn't see me.
You're blending into the wall right now. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
How are the Jags doing, I guess, is the question we always ask on Tuesday, because you're the guy who puts the film study in. Late start today, Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman. Fat Tony here with you, and let's get to it, man. I heard you say on the broadcast, as did everybody else, that Blake Bortles' performance had changed your mind on what you would do to start the season. Watching the film as you go back, was that a heat-of-the-moment comment, or do you still believe that?
No, I mean, it wasn't a heat-of-the-moment comment. It was a comment that I really felt strongly that he wasn't ready to start yet.
Okay.
That he needed to have more of a book, so to speak, but, you know, behind him, to where you could say, okay, you feel comfortable with him taking the reins. And after watching him come off the bench cold and run a 2-minute drill where he had, yes, you know, a couple near interceptions, but the way that he pushes the ball down the field, the way that he makes those around him better, to me, that is a big sign that says, hey, look, you know, let him go. You know, but at the same time, I respect what Gus Bradley and David Caldwell are doing, and I understand that you never make the wrong decision by waiting. And the other thing is that how much do we really know? You know, and I mentioned this last night with JP and Tony and Pete. And I said, do we really know exactly what is going on? Is he getting every protection right? Is he getting every run check right? Is the playbook completely open when he's on the field? We don't know that. You know, so I trust them because they know a hell of a lot more than we do,
right,
about all the intricate details. But from my eyes say that he's ready to go. Now, I'm not saying that he would perform better than Chad immediately if he were in the starting lineup, but I can say that he's going to make those around him better, and he can handle it. And the most impressive thing to me is that how many times have you heard his teammates talk about his demeanor?
Every time you ask them about Blake Bortles.
Time.
It's usually the first thing they bring up.
How many times did you ever hear any of Blaine Gabbert's teammates talk about his demeanor? Exactly. You know, so you feel confident that his demeanor and his personal makeup can handle it. You see the evidence on the field that he makes those around him better. But then again, you never make a mistake by waiting and letting him develop more.
He is averaging an incredible number of yards per
attempt. That was a 10-minute answer. It could have been a yes or no.
Fantastic. And you're making up for those 20 minutes that we missed you here. when you look at him driving the ball down the field compared to Chad Henne, you know, just numbers-wise, I look at
it's like 4 yards per attempt more.
Correct, which is astronomical in the National Football League.
Yeah.
But when Henne comes out, and his first couple reads, it looked like the first read on the play, because he looked immediately to Marquise Lee, got the ball in his hands. You know, they're trying to get the ball in his hands, that short stuff. It almost seems like they're calling plays to get it out of Chad's hands quicker, rely on the...
See, I don't think that's what it
you
is.
You don't think that's...
No, I think that that's just Blake's nature, and that
he's going to look for the opportunity
to drive.
He's going
to look for the opportunity. You know, and it's interesting when you listen to him talk. He always talks about calculated risk. How many other rookies have you ever heard start to talk about calculated risk? None. I mean, you hear veteran guys talk about taking calculated risks.
Right.
You know, so to me, just the simple fact that he is aware that it's a calculated risk, to me, impresses the heck out of me.
How long do you think this goes on? I mean, because Chad Henne, obviously, that they've been consistent. And, Jeff, to be honest with you, going into this game, I said over 99% certainty that nothing that happens on the field was going to change Gus Bradley's mind. That probably wavered for me a little bit as I watched Blake playing, but in the end, I still thought it was almost a certainty because they had been so consistent in telling us what the plan was that Chad Henne would still open as a starter. But how much rope do you think he has now?
Well, I think that's up to him. You know, I think that's up to him, and it's also partly up to how Blake progresses in practice. You know, even during training camp and practice, Blake hasn't looked, I don't think, at times as good as Chad.
Right.
It's just when the game's all of a sudden, the lights come on, and it gets bright, Blake shines. And there's not a lot of guys that I played with in my 10-year career or guys that I watched in since that point in 1998, which is what, you know, it's 16, 17 years, to where you watched them in practice and you all of a sudden got the game day and you went, where'd that guy go that I was watching in practice?
Right.
This guy's a lot better.
Right.
You know, gamers, you know, and he just has that unique ability. And I was telling you guys, and I think I was definitely telling Frank Frangie this, that, you know, he won't look as good in practice. He will look better in the games because of some of the athletic things, his innate pocket presence, and his ability to create. So when he gets on game day, when things go off the paper, that's when he'll look better. And in practice, things are rarely off the paper. In games, things are almost always off the paper. And so that's positive. I mean, that's exactly what you're looking for. Now, there are a lot of things that he needs to clean up to where when he's on paper or in practice where things are natural that he looks better at. But that will come in time.
One of the things we'll talk about today are expectations for this football team, the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you today, based on what you've seen in preseason now, through three games, and that's the majority of what we're going to see. Obviously, the fourth game's handled a little bit differently. Have your expectations changed for this football team? We encourage you to tweet us today. In fact, if you have questions for Jeff, tweet them at me or post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. I'm having a little problem with the phone this morning. But if you tweet at me, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren, we'll pass those questions along. And you can weigh in on the fan feedback spotlight. Also, Facebook.com/Jaguars Today. How much is this decision-making process, if or what degree, is tied up in to question marks on the offensive line, young skill position group around him, particularly you're talking about maybe three of your top four receivers are going to be rookies. Does that weigh into the debate in Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell's mind on when to play Blake Bortles?
I think it does, and there's kind of two ways to look at it. The Chad Haney, you know, positive perspective is that, okay, there's a lot of things that are unsettled still with this offense. You know, the offensive line, they're still trying to figure out who's going to play center. We know who's going to play right guard. It's Brandon Linder, who, by the way, we'll get into this later on. He's the best interior offensive lineman.
You mentioned that last week, yeah.
Yes, he is. And so because the offensive line is still a little unsettled and they haven't quite gelled yet and they haven't played really any real, haven't played any real games yet, the wide receiving core has been a mixed match of a bag of wide receivers throughout OTAs, mini camp, and training camp. So from his perspective and his viewpoint is, since there's so much that's not settled yet, why not have a settled veteran present at the quarterback position to help everything else develop? Now, the other perspective is the Blake Bortles perspective. Because all of this is unsettled, maybe the natural and best way to go about this is to scale everything back because the offensive line has not gelled yet. Because they haven't played any games yet, because the wide receiving core has not been intact. And so since all these other parts aren't quite ready to flourish yet, why not go ahead and put Blake Bortles in there, scale back the playbook, and just go with it? You know, I mean, so there's
let him learn on the fly.
Let him learn on the fly, right, with everybody else.
And there's also that school of thought that if you've got the more mobile guy behind an offensive line,
it'll make them better.
That, right. He'll be able to extend plays better. He's getting rid of the football quickly. On top of that, let me ask you about Zane Beatles, who got hurt. Obviously, he's not going to play this Thursday night. Might not have played anyway as a vet. How has he played beyond the injury? How has he played so far this preseason?
I think he's been real good in pass protection. I want to see him drop his pad level a little bit more in the running game.
Is that a concern for this whole offensive line, opening holes in the running game right now?
Not so much, because I saw some signs in Detroit where I thought that it was really nice, and some of it was them, and some of it was just Toby Gerhardt.
Right.
Who really pushed the pile. And last night on Jaguars All Access, I showed a couple plays to where he got yards after contact. And that's the thing that you expect to see out of Toby Gerhardt.
But there were two or three of those plays in that game for Toby. And I remember you highlighting them on the broadcast as we're watching them on TV. But at the end of the day, it's 10 carries for 32 yards with that second effort.
Yeah, but see, sometimes you got to remember with a running back, you know, 10 carries for 33 yards, and all of a sudden, okay, if he stays in the game and he has a Reggie Bush run.
Right. Oh, 80, sure.
86 yards. Pop. Yeah, then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, these numbers are fantastic. You know, so.
I'm going to say no 86-yard touchdown for Toby Gerhardt this year. That's just going to be my guess.
He'd have to have some blocking along the way.
He'd probably pick up an escort.
But, you know, he's not slow.
He's not slow, but he's not.
No, he's not slow, but he's not a burner. Bush.
He's not a burner. You know, he's not a burner. But did you see Alan Ball almost ran him down
right
from the far side of the field? You know, to me, that was impressive on Alan Ball's part.
Sure.
I mean, what great speed, a guy that's coming back from an injury, great effort, great speed, and had an opportunity at getting him.
Did that come down to one thing, Jonathan Cyprien overran the hole?
Well, I don't completely blame Jonathan Cyprien, because Red Bryant is, remember we talked about up here about six eye techniques on the grease board up here one day, where the defensive end is the inside eye of the tight end. When Jonathan Cyprien was the eighth guy in the box, the safety coming up, an unblocked defender, he was expecting Red Bryant to be into that tackle tight end gap.
Okay.
Well, Red was a little late getting there, and so Jonathan kind of came up in the run support and was thinking, I need to cover for Red. Well, so he starts to stick his nose in Red's hole, because Red hasn't really done a good enough job of getting in there and collapsing that hole. And then all of a sudden, at the last second, Reggie Bush makes a great cut, and he bounces out to where Jonathan Cyprien should have been. It goes back to what probably gets played on NFL films and Gus Bradley highlights more than anything.
Do your job.
Do your job.
Right.
Do your job. Jonathan Cyprien was trying to do both. And you can't. You got to do one.
Right. You got to do your responsibility, because it starts a cascade effect. One guy gets out of position, somebody else tries to cover for him.
Well, and Jonathan Cyprien also has to learn, because this is on Jonathan, but you know, he should have had a little bit better job by Red Bryant, and knowing that you really never want to stick your nose inside, because you're the outside guy. All of your help is to where Red Bryant's supposed to be.
Right.
You know, everybody else is going to be coming from the other way to help close that gap from the other side. So take care of your job. If Red doesn't quite get there, there's other people that can help from the other side.
All right. I thought it was an example, though. You know, you always hear coaches talk about one play, one or two plays over the course of a game really turn the outcome of a game. Cyprien, not to pick on it, but he had a chance for a pick on the opening drive, got his hands on the football. You know, you squeeze that ball. Who knows if you get points on the board yourself. And then that one big play, because really.
But then there was another play to run fit. He had two run fit issues and then the dropped interception. So what wasn't his best game, but.
No.
But I'm not worried about
him. But I'm just saying, I'm not singling him out. And you're right. We're not going to worry about him in the long run, but it can come from anybody. You never know when that play is going to come, because in the end of the day, Matt Stafford threw for 98 yards and a pick. Didn't put it in the end zone. They didn't sustain the drive down the field. They got one blown assignment. Big hole opened up. Like you said, good cut from Reggie Bush, and he outraced everybody to the house.
Well, and that kind of shows you a perfect example of how team defense and team football, why it's so important. If you have one breakdown, all of a sudden it makes everybody look bad, and then all of a sudden people start saying, this team wasn't focused. This team wasn't ready. They came out of the tunnel flat. You know, I mean, all those kind of terms all come into play, and they come into play because all of a sudden, you know, you had one bust in a gap-fit defense, and that's why it's important to do your job in a gap-fit defense. Whereas the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, where you're two-gapping and all that kind of stuff, you can have one guy get out of position a little bit because they're playing more of a read-type, softer approach. Not softer approach, but a different approach. It doesn't look as bad.
Jeff Lagerman's job is to break down that tape and share what he's learned with us every Tuesday, and he will continue to do that. Late start this morning on Jaguars Today, but we're rolling now. If you'd like to get a question on, best way today is going to be Twitter or Facebook. You can tweet at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. We'll turn those around for you quickly. Also, Facebook.com/Jaguars Today as well. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you, and we will come back in a minute. We'll continue to look at some tape from Week 3 and what Jeff expects from Week 4 of the preseason. Jags on the field for real in less than 2 weeks, opening up the 2014 campaign. It's almost here. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today, continuing live from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Tony, those shoes. You know, some shoes, I'm told, have heels. Does that bring anything to mind for you, what the theme
might be? Haven't
heard
anything about heels in the last month. So.
I probably haven't either, so I'm stuck so far on this theme today, the Eagles, those shoes. Maybe it's something to do with Eagles.
Maybe it is.
Possible.
That's the week one opponent, right?
It's got to be what the theme is. That's got to be. We'll check in with Lauren a little bit later on that and see if we're right about the Eagles being the theme for week one. The offensive line, we're going to talk about that in just a second with Jeff Lagerman here. Foundation Professionals of Florida feels that you the fan base are the foundation of the organization. You could say the offensive line is the foundation, certainly what makes things go on the football field. The photo contest continuing this week, looking for the best decked out Jaguar vehicle. If you've got a vehicle that's done up in a Jaguar motif, post a picture of that. Either tweet it at me, at MD_1010XL, or better yet, post it in the Facebook thread, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We've got it pinned at the top of the page. Foundation Professionals of Florida looking for somebody with the best decorated Jaguar vehicle. They'll go into drawing for a pair of tickets to the home opener versus the Colts, obviously in week three of the season. Foundation Professionals of Florida, work with your insurance company. Financing is available. They'll give you the peace of mind that your home is safe. Of course, they're licensed and insured. 287-2690 or online at foundationprosfl.com. Talking about that offensive line, Jeff, George Yarnough, who won't be returning this year. He's battling cancer. Luke Butkus is filling in on the offensive line as the coach of that position group. Has ties, of course, to the Detroit Lions as well. And
yeah, George does.
You were telling us that they had a nice kind of little pregame thing to commemorate here, or to honor him.
Well, it was. I don't think it was so much to honor him, just to reach out to him again. You know, I give Gus Bradley all the credit in the world in that, you know, his offensive line coach, George Yarnough, is undergoing cancer treatment in Spokane, Washington. And George Yarnough spent a number of years as the Detroit Lions offensive line coach. And I don't know how this initiated. My guess is it came from Gus Bradley, because Gus has really made a point to reach out on a daily basis to George Yarnough, some type of communication, and from everybody. And so in pregame.
Daily. That's pretty cool.
Every single day. And so they're out there at Ford Field, and it's, you know, well before kickoff, and all of a sudden you see 25 or more big guys walk out of the tunnel, and it's the Jaguars offensive line, and it's the Detroit Lions offensive line. And I'm like, this is weird. What's going on? And they all gather at the middle of the field and sit down on the Lions logo, almost like a team photo type. And all of the line groups from both teams got together and took a picture, and then they sent it to George in Washington. I mean, that's good stuff, man. I mean, because that's what football is all about. You know, in my 10 years of playing, I can honestly say that I remember the relationships way more than I remember the wins and losses. And so for Gus Bradley and this organization to continue to reach out to one of their own, one of their members that's undergoing something that's certainly very trying right now, and George Yarnough's cancer treatment, that's just it's a special way to reach out. And I thought that was just outstanding.
You know what? And it's easy to do something and then the guy goes off on his own, and like, you know, with a player, an injured player, they always talk about how they don't feel like they're part of the team. Gus
sure.
Bradley is certainly, this is more than a broken leg. You know, this is a life threatening type situation every time you talk about cancer. So,
I mean, how many coaches just can't take the blinders off to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, and I've been saying this since last year, you know, this city, I mean, this football team, they have a really special man in Gus Bradley. I mean, the ability to take the blinders off, the football blinders off, and realize what's important is amazing to me.
And rare, certainly, at this level of the profession.
It is rare.
Yeah.
You know, and so Jacksonville, I mean, feel really good about your coach, I mean, because of things like that.
They feel really good about the general manager. Obviously, they think he's a couple of young bucks in here with the GM and the head coach paired up for a long time, they hope. Dave Caldwell had an opportunity to get together with Rasheen Mathis. You were telling me you wanted to share that story.
Well, Rasheen's never met David Caldwell, you know, because remember when Dave Caldwell took the job, Rasheen's contract had expired.
Correct.
So there never had to be a release or a face-to-face meeting with Rasheen Mathis. And so I'm talking to Dave before the game, and I see Rasheen, and, you know, hey, look, I really like Rasheen. You know, he was here for a very long time, one of the greatest Jaguar players in history, still playing very well for the Detroit Lions, the career interceptions leader for the Jaguars. And he comes over to talk to me, you know, and gave him a big hug and slapped his hand and talking to him. And all of a sudden, Dave is standing there, you know, and I thought that they knew each other. You know, so I didn't introduce them. You know, I'm just assuming they knew each other.
Sure.
And Dave reaches his hand out and says, Rasheen, Dave Caldwell. And Rasheen says, hey, nice to meet you. And because right before that, I was asking Rasheen, you know, because he lives in Jacksonville in the offseason. I was asking, I said, hey, have you been down to the stadium to see these scoreboards,
right,
you know, that are just monstrous? And he said, I've driven by a few times. And he goes, but I didn't want to go in, you know, and be like a tourist. And Dave hears that. And that's when Dave came in and said, hey, Rasheen, Dave Caldwell. And Dave's first comment to Rasheen was, just want to let you know that you're always welcome at the stadium, always welcome, and would love to have you come in anytime. I said right then and there, I said, another, you know, personal act of class.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's what you're looking for. I mean, you want classy leadership in your organization, and seeing those two things in pregame in Detroit, just made me feel really good about the direction that this franchise is heading with two men like that leading the
show.
You
know, when it comes to Rasheen, Joe Cower brought this up with us in Crosstalk last week, you know, asking about how he thinks Jaguar fans, how we think Jaguar fans remember him. I think there was that period of time when they felt like he could do no right towards the end of his tenure here in Jacksonville. Couldn't tackle anybody. We've discussed, you know, sometimes that was his fault. Sometimes he was covering up for other guys, and you can look like you're out of position when all of a sudden you're trying to play catch up if the safety's not in the right spot, whatever the case. But overall, I mean, Rasheen is Jacksonville, right?
Absolutely.
Jacksonville kid, went to college relatively close by, and came home and played the vast majority of his career here. And if anybody has any sense, they'll always remember him as a great Jacksonville Jaguar, one of the best to ever play. And I think ultimately that's what the fans feel about him. Rasheen, like you said, always super classy guy. Couldn't meet a nicer guy. Couldn't meet a more professional guy. Tony, I've remarked on this, I don't know how many times over the years. One guy that you knew you could always count on. They could lose it 47-0, and Rasheen would stand there for as long as you want in front of the locker room. And
answer
not everybody's
question.
Like that.
No, he'd answer any question. And, you know, he loves Jacksonville. He's going to come back here. He's a huge golf fanatic when I was asking him.
I know it, man.
How his golf game was going up there in Michigan. He said, you know, I don't get to play much anymore up here. He said it's the weather's not quite as conducive. But, he gets back to Jacksonville and gets his golf game in. And I really like Rasheen. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I've had the opportunity to get to know, you know, in my time here in the role that I've played, whether it's been as a player or a broadcaster, and he's one of my favorites, you know, and I've got a list of favorite guys, you know, and he's right in there.
I got some questions. We asked folks to send them in via Twitter today. The phone lines are down at the moment, but if you want to talk with Jeff Logman, we can do it this way. Send your question along to @MD_1010XL, and I'll pass it along to Loggy. And we'll start with the order we received on this one from Colin at Roller Coaster Rider on Twitter. Given the good play from Bortles, do you think Gus and Dave had made it difficult on themselves if Henny goes out there and really stinks it up the first couple weeks? I mean, in terms of, I don't know if they've made it difficult. Ultimately, they hold the keys to when he gets the reins. Let me ask you this. What do you think is the earliest possible scenario, barring injury, that we see Blake Bortles start a game here in Jacksonville?
Well, I think that's dependent upon performance. If Chad's playing well, then Chad will continue to play. If Chad starts to have, you know, consistent bad performances, then, you know, you've got to do what's best for your football team. I don't think there's a time. I don't think there's okay that they're sitting there thinking, hey, look, you know, by week 7, this is when we want to get him.
No, it's not a question of want to, but in terms of, let's say Chad goes out there and look, I've said it all along. Tony, back me up on this. If you're a Jag fan, you should want Chad Henne to go out there and play.
You want them both to be
football.
Good. You want them both to be good. You know, and what you're asking and what was it Twitter?
Was it
a tweet?
It's always a tweet.
Okay.
the
tweet question, it's hypothetical.
Sure it is.
And that's hard to answer a hypothetical question. Give me the circumstances.
I'll give the circumstances.
Give me the circumstances where what Blake is doing in practice.
Let's say Blake is continuing to progress around the same pace as he has been right now. It's 2 weeks in. I mean, it's two games. I guess I'm asking you, what's the shortest period of time if Henny is absolutely terrible at the far end of the spectrum? You know, the worst he can possibly be. The Jags are 0-1 whatever. What's the earliest you could see a move being made in the season?
Cleveland game.
What's that, week 7?
7, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So not before then?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
And as long
and
as...
And it's dependent upon Chad.
Sure, and as long as Henny has him around 500. Now, you can win in spite of a guy, too. But as long as he's playing decent football and he's got him, you know, within striking distance of a wild card spot, which really, if you're 7-7 through 14 games, you're probably in the wild card chase in the AFC.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you're not going to make a change.
Right. You're going to, if you're in that circumstance, you're Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley, you're riding it out.
Ride it out.
And at least until you're officially eliminated.
Right, and I'm going to go back to saying what I said is that you never make a mistake by letting somebody sit back and learn and continue to develop. And I think that they're going to treat Blake Bortles much differently than a backup quarterback throughout the regular season as most teams would. You know, most teams, the one gets all the reps. I mean, they're getting him ready to play the game, right. And the backup's got to take mental reps and show team reps and then work on the side. I think that he will be in the mix in practice. I don't know this for a fact, but I think that it just makes sense because, they know that Blake Bortles is the future of this football team. They know that Chad Henne is a solid guy, but his ceiling is reaching very good backup. You know, maybe a guy that just carries the bag for a little while for somebody else. I mean, and I think that they understand that. And so you just make the best of it as you can. And then when Blake Bortles is ready, then you insert him into the lineup. And then not sooner.
Let me ask you this one from Jeffrey McKinney at McKinney919. Because I get this.
By the way, for the last tweeter, The Incredible Hulk, my favorite roller coaster.
There you go. All right. Didn't know you were a roller coaster aficionado. I hate roller coasters.
I love them.
Where's that, down at Busch Gardens?
That one's at Universal, I believe.
Yeah, it's
Universal.
At Islands of Adventure down there.
I screamed like a girl when it shot me up. You know, it goes click, 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 and you think you're climbing to the top?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and you're thinking, okay, slow climb to the top, because I'm not exactly the smartest guy in the world before getting on a roller coaster. I wasn't watching to see what it did. You know, if I had, I would have seen that they shoot you out of that tunnel. So when I'm on this thing, it's going click, click, click. I'm thinking it's like...
You're about to drop.
It's like the rebel yell, like I used to do at, it was Old Dominion Park in Virginia or whatever it was.
King's Dominion.
Thank you, Joe. And then you get to the top, then you start the momentum going downhill. Well, this thing, all of a sudden, it shoots you up. And out, and like from 0 to 60, and I don't know how much, and I was screaming like a little girl.
Hey, nice.
Yeah, you get bannerized. Like, you get injected, and then all of a sudden you're the Hulk, and it just goes from 0 to BAM! Just like that. It's a fun coaster. It's a fun
ride. What a rush.
Yeah.
Get bannerized.
What a rush.
Yeah. That's two of my favorite things, so I get a nice, an injection and a roller coaster ride.
I was like a little kid as soon as I got off. I went right back in line.
You know, the thing of it is, I don't have the fear. It doesn't bother me the concept of it, because I think they're inherently pretty safe. You know, hear about an accident once every 10 years or something like that. It's the way my stomach, I would not have had the right stuff, put it that way. I've seen what the astronauts go through to go under the G-force training. That's not me. It's not my stomach.
I used to like a lot more thrills when I was younger, not as much now.
All right, I got an interesting question from Jeffrey McKinney. We'll hold it over, though, to the other side. And other tweets coming in as well for Jeff Logman. If you want to ask him a question, we'll do it that way today. At MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. We'll rip through some of these coming up on the other side, including this date in football history and the Honda drive around the National Football League. I'm Mike Dempsey with Jeff Logman and Fat Tony. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, not an exactly event-filled day, but in 1971, Tony, do you know what happened with the New York Giants in 1971?
I do not.
Dare you not know. you know, Jeff Logman, what happened with the Giants
in
1971.
I do not.
They left the Bronx for New Jersey.
Oh.
For the Meadowlands, I guess it was at the time.
Jimmy, yes, it was.
Where they buried Jimmy Hoffa under which end zone was it? North end zone?
I believe it was
south
the north,
end zone.
Yeah.
Well, the end zones there run east and west.
Do they really?
Yeah. At the old Meadowlands they did.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Poor planning?
That's just the way that they always always ran.
Because they always, I mean, they're supposed to all run north and south, so the sun doesn't rise in your face or set in your face, right?
No, because when you came into the Meadowlands, you know, being there for 6 years, you actually walked in from the western end through the tunnel, and the eastern end did not have a tunnel, and so it was very interesting that the winds at the Meadowlands were always legendary,
right?
Because the wind, no matter what direction it would come in, it would always filter through that western end tunnel and create a lot of unique wind currents. I remember talking to Pat Leahy, the New York Jets field goal kicker, for a very long time, and he said, you know, this place is crazy. He said, you have the wind blowing from one direction, and you look at the flags, and they're going all different ways because of that tunnel, that one tunnel.
This date, 1973, Barrett Robbins was born, best known for going AWOL.
Disappearing.
For the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
right?
He had some mental things.
Yes, he did.
Unfortunately.
He did have some issues. But that is this Dayton football history brought to you by the best fence company in Jacksonville, their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product for you at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Get a professional free estimate at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this Dayton football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Washington Redskins safety Brandon Merriweather has been suspended for the first two games of the season after a helmet-to-helmet hit on Baltimore Ravens receiver Torrey Smith during their preseason game on Saturday. The Jags go to Washington week two. Obviously, Merriweather won't be in the lineup for Washington that day. Second-year safety Philip Thomas out of Fresno State, a fourth-round draft pick last year, is listed as Merriweather's backup. And Richie Incognito has been cleared for a full return to the NFL, according to a league source. According to Adam Schefter, there are at least three teams and possibly as many as five that could be interested in talking at least to Incognito. He reportedly had a visit with the Tampa Bay Bucks yesterday.
Shaking your head a little bit. What's
the guy's a mess.
He is a mess, but doesn't that just go to show you if you can play, they will overlook the professional sports?
There's a lot of things that shows you, Mike.
It goes to show
you that, one, that mentally he's unstable. The two, that he lives in a different world. Three, and that Twitter is not a very good avenue to express yourself for somebody like
him. Not for him, no.
and four, that if you can play, you will play.
That you will play. They'll find a spot for you in the National Football League. That one certainly rings true. In this case, it looks like with the Tampa Bay Bucks, we'll see if they actually go on and sign him. This question in from Jeffrey McKinney, at McKinney919, says, you know, I've heard this. I thought it was all about competition because all fans see, for the most part, is those preseason games.
Sure.
Okay? And the cumulative effect of those preseason games, without knowing what the assignments and the play calls and all that are, the eye test is clearly Blake Bortles has had the better preseason. Okay? That's the typical standpoint.
Well, and the numbers back it up.
So, Jeffrey McKinney says, I don't understand how Gus Bradley can say he's all about competition in every position except for quarterback. How do you respond to that?
Well, first and foremost, there's nobody that is more principled than Gus Bradley. So don't assume that there is some other agenda that Gus Bradley has. With Blake Bortles in the quarterback position, there's so much more that goes into making that decision than just, okay, what happens on game day. I mean, it's a test or an evaluation in meeting rooms, in the workout rooms, on the practice field, everything. So all of that goes into the decision making for the quarterback, process. But also, you're trying to make a decision for the next decade.
Right.
You're not trying to make a decision for the here and now.
Just for the here and now.
Or for the next 15 years.
Right.
I mean, so don't you want to make it right? If you're going to make a decision that's going to last for 15 years, don't you think you ought to make sure that it's ready?
Okay, one of the counterpoints to that argument would be, how's he going to learn anything sitting on the sideline watching? Won't he learn more? Eventually he's going to have to go through it and get that culture shock of being thrown into adjusting to the speed of the game. Isn't it better to get that over as early as possible?
Well, it eases the pain by sitting back and learning at a much slower rate, by not playing than it does by playing. And I think you're always worried, not so much about the mental makeup of a player, but you want to have them when they are stepping onto the field that they are ready to have some success. And I'm not saying to have complete success, but to have some success, to have encouragement, to continue to work and to develop. And, with Blake, I think he has the mental makeup to do that, but at the same time, it's a 10-15 year decision. Why rush it?
Despite that, though, Jeff Logman would play him.
To me, I would play him and scale it back. That's just me. But at the same time, with Blake, you've got to be careful. And you've got to be careful because the most important thing when you make that switch is that the locker room is ready to accept it. If you don't, then all of a sudden, you end up running the risk of losing a football team. I was a part of that in New York. We had Kenny O'Brien, who was an established veteran like Chad, probably more than Chad because he'd been starting for the New York Jets for a long period of time. They draft Brownie Nagel in round two. He sits the whole first year, inactive every game. Year two of Brownie Nagel's career, they decide that they're going to go ahead and put him in the lineup. And Kenny O'Brien's contract was up, and so there was this protracted holdout that was, I think, really club-forced to allow Brownie Nagel to have the reps and to have the team. We weren't on board with that. We knew that, Brownie Nagel was not ready to handle that helm, and I think it alienated the team because we felt like that we wasted a year and an opportunity by not having Kenny O'Brien on our football team. So the most important thing is to make sure that the team is on board and they've seen enough to know that he's ready to take over. And it has to be sometimes overwhelming. It can't be 55% believe that that's the right thing to do.
Right.
Because all of a sudden when he starts to play and he has difficulties, all of a sudden that 55% of support from his teammates starts to wane and they start going, starts drifting back.
Now
into
you're 45.
Yeah,
now
exactly.
You're the minority again. Right.
Exactly.
I gotcha. All right. This one in from Hodari. At Hodari11 on Twitter, wants to know, what's your opinion on the zone blocking scheme, and does it take longer typically for an offensive line to have cohesion to employ a zone blocking scheme as opposed to what would that be? A
well, it takes time the way that the NFL is now because of the lack of live reps going into the season. You know, for a long period of time, it took a while for the passing game to develop because, you know, in training camp, I mean, it was physical. There was a lot of guys on the roster. There was cutting and live drills and practice. Well, now with the scaled back amount of practice time that they have, I think that the run blocking takes time. And also the risk of injury, you're not doing a lot of those drills. So you have to get in the games in a lot of cases to get better at that zone blocking because the most important block to the zone blocking scheme is the backside cutbacks or cut blocks. I mean, that's where you see the stretch, and then guy cuts it back, and all of a sudden it rips it off for 30 yards.
Right.
You know, so then it takes time, and especially for this football team with an offensive line that hasn't played a game together yet.
That stretch play to the left side has not looked pretty to my untrained eye.
That hadn't looked good either side yet.
Right.
You know, and look, they're not just a zone running scheme. They're a power O scheme. They're a lead team. They run everything. This is not a outside zone specific run team.
How difficult is that on an offensive lineman? Is that something that should be kind of second nature once you get down the responsibilities that you can switch into one mode into the other?
Yeah, you should be able to do all of them, and that's not that big of a deal.
Okay.
But, you know, I think the reason that they really like the zone, the outside zone scheme, is it complements the play action pass. In other words, you fake the outside zone run, the quarterback turns around and runs the bootleg. You know, so you have to have some success or threat of the outside zone for a whole nother package to open up against the defense. So that's why this team continues to push it. Now, is Toby Gerhart the best outside zone running back? Probably not. He's
right.
More of a downhill power O type of guy. One of the best zone, outside zone running backs I've ever seen in my life, and you should know this, is Freeman McNeil. Also Thurman Thomas, Buffalo Bills. He used to run the zone weak. I mean, the guys that have the ability to plant the foot and change direction at full speed are the guys that you want in that type of package. Toby's more of a build to speed and then put to power and get a shoulder square and get yardage. So it's going to be interesting to see. Now, Jordan Todman probably a little bit better at the outside zone. But you got to have it. You got to have it incorporated into your offense because it opens up a whole nother play group.
One more in here before we break. This one from Eric Soriano. A question for you with no week one rookie starting quarterbacks, now that Matt Cassel has been named the starter in Minnesota. Who do you think gets the start first among the rookies? Obviously, you said possibly Cleveland might be the earliest you'd see.
Yeah, it'll be Johnny.
You think Johnny will get the start ahead of at some point in the first 6 weeks of the season?
Yeah, and they've totally mishandled that situation. You know, Mike Pettine was my former college roommate at Virginia. I'm very, very disappointed in the way that he's handled that quarterback situation. It's become we knew it was going to be a circus. I mean, it's Johnny Manziel, for God's sakes.
Right.
I mean, he's a Heisman winner, controversial, you know. But I really think that they should have done a better job of telling him right away, you're the backup, you've got to earn the right, whereas they kind of came in and said, hey, we're going to let him compete. And then all of a sudden, the biggest problem that I had was the way that his teammates have reacted to him, and it almost became a divided locker room in Cleveland, you know, where you got some guys supporting Johnny and coming out and saying it, and then you got some guys coming out and supporting Hoyer, and you never saw anybody supporting each other. You never saw Hoyer and Manziel interact on the sideline or during the games. That's a problem. That's a big problem.
Well, they certainly haven't gone through that here because of the way they handled the situation. But
and they've handled it beautifully here.
What in terms of just actually seeing Manziel play, I don't know how much you've watched.
Well, I've watched him. I watched two of his preseason games.
What's your assessment?
I saw
so
the
far?
Exact same thing that told me that he should be like a third or fourth round draft pick.
Which was?
He doesn't see the field. He doesn't see the field. He has flashes of brush in his face, and then he takes off and he leaves open wide receivers. You know, a quarterback may start his NFL career like that. We saw RG3 do that. But eventually, at some point, the quarterback has to stay in the pocket and get the ball into the playmaker's hands. And RG3, you can tell, is struggling to do that right now. And I think that that's an issue with Washington Redskins right now, which that bodes well for the Jacksonville Jaguars in week two.
Absolutely, it does. A number of things bode well for them early in the season. We'll get to some of that coming up here. More of your questions as well. If you want to get on board, phone lines are back up and working and open for the first time today at 641-1010. Got plenty more questions coming in for Jeff Loggeman on Twitter as well. We'll continue to discuss preseason moving into week number four with your Jacksonville Jaguars. It's Jaguars today here on 1010XL. 92.5 FM. Jaguars today continues on this Tuesday. Paul Simon, Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes.
Is Paul Simon from Philadelphia?
Is he? That's a good question.
You're really working it, Tony.
Paul starts with a P.
Hi, by the way, guys.
So
hello.
I think
hi.
That's correct. Hello, Lauren. I can't. There's something to do with shoes. I can't.
Whatever. I
give
you such an easy one. You got it immediately. Instead of being happy about it, you call me. What did you call me? Self-serving.
Stuck. I'm stuck at this point on what the theme of the day might be.
I really just love this song, and I wanted to get it in.
Is
how about
that?
That?
It was?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Paul Simon, Philadelphia native. Paul Simon. That's the program today. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. Jeff, the Jaguars placed Aaron Colvin on the non-football injury list. They had one roster move to make to get down to 75 by 4 o'clock today. That was it. What does that mean for Colvin?
Well, it means that for the first 6 weeks of the season, he does not count against the active roster, but he's going to be obviously still with the football team and continue his rehab process. Now, at the end of 6 weeks in the regular season, he will have 21 days to practice with the team. And during those 21 days, you can make a determination, okay, do we want to bring him to the active roster, or do we want to go ahead and put him on some other type of roster designation, whether it be injured reserve or whatever?
Right.
So it basically buys you until week 9,
right,
essentially, to see if he's going to be ready to play football again.
Got half the season to see if he can help you this year.
Yeah. And that's good. I mean, I think that, obviously he would have been drafted much higher than where he was drafted at if he had been healthy. They feel really good about him. Now, he suffered the injury at the Senior Bowl, and so a year out would be into January.
Right.
Most guys take a year. That's the way it used to be. Nowadays, some guys end up making it back in 9-10 months, and so week 9 would put him into November, first part of November, so that would put him at about 10 months ballpark, you know, give or take when he had the surgery. So, I mean, he would have a chance to be able to be ready to go then. But the problem is that he's a rookie. So I think the chances of him actually playing are pretty small because he really hasn't had and has not had a training camp, OTAs, mini camps. That's a lot to ask of a rookie corner.
But the idea is to defer that decision as long as possible.
Well, it's really the idea is not to defer that decision. The idea is to be able to let him rehab, not have him count against you on the roster. And then when he gets back, to give him repetitions that he hasn't gotten yet.
Right.
Because,
a look.
Because if you just put him on injury reserve right now,
he's
where's
done.
He going to get to work?
Right.
You know, so at least once he gets to that point, then he can start to get repetitions with the team to start getting back to being a football player.
The league increased the size of the practice squad from 8 to 10.
Yeah, and they liberated the rules a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's the good thing. I think there's more eligibility. The eligibility expands. I don't know the exact particulars of what that is, but I know that there are now guys that are eligible for the practice squad that previously were not.
Like Ricky Stanzi,
like a Mike Brewster. So it has to do with the number of active games and number of accrued seasons that they have. And that's the way it should be. I mean, why not use the practice squad to continue to develop a guy? Why put a cap on it and say, well, you only get this amount of time, and if he's had this happen to him in the previous year, he's not practice squad eligible. It might be a guy that has value, that has the ability to develop, and because of the previous rules, you couldn't keep him on the practice squad.
Do you think now they'll keep those two extra quarterbacks on the practice squad? Your best guess right now, Stansy and Morris?
One of them. I don't know if either one of them are worthy of putting on the practice squad, but it gives you that possibility. You know, this is going to be a two-quarterback roster.
Who is more valuable to you, a guy like Stansy who's slightly acclimated to the NFL, a little bit more, you know, more of a mature veteran, has been around, but he hasn't played all that much at all, or a young guy like Stephen Morris, maybe more raw, but I think we've all seen some physical tools. I think he may have the best arm of any of the four quarterbacks.
Yeah, he's erratic, though.
Sure, but I mean, who would you rather devote a spot to if you, Jeff Logman, was picking? Are you going to go with the guy that, you know what, if, let's say, Henny got hurt, maybe Stansy would be a more stable, reliable backup? Is that the way you go,
yeah,
as opposed to?
That's what I would be. That's what be the factor for me. You know, just because.
Because ultimately, your quarterback of the future is one of those two on the, yeah, I mean, on the 53 anyway.
In order to answer the question of who is deserving to be on the practice squad, you got to answer the question of who is on your roster currently. And it's going to be Chad Henne and Blake Bortles. Chad Henne's going to be the starter. If he's the starter and he gets hurt, then Blake Bortles becomes your starter. Who would you want to elevate from the practice squad to be the backup? It's not going to be Stephen Morris. But at that point, you could go ahead and say, okay, well, let's go get a veteran. Let's go get a Jordan Palmer.
Right.
And bring him in. You know, so, I think that Stephen Morris has a chance of being on the practice squad, but then all of a sudden, if Blake Bortles is the starter because of a Chad Henne injury, that could change. As far as Stephen Morris could stay on the practice squad.
And they may
go out and
sign a veteran,
Ricky,
right.
They could go sign Ricky Stansy.
Right, if he's available. But yeah, or a guy like that, sure.
Exactly.
Certainly. Let's get a few more tweet questions coming your way, and you can get in on the phones as well if you'd like to at 641-1010. Jeff Logman always in. Going to class with Loggy on Tuesdays here on Jaguars Today. Do you agree or disagree, Jeff? This is from Drum Meter on Twitter, that elite quarterbacks use checkdowns as a last resort. Backups or play safe quarterbacks have them in their mind a little bit earlier. People refer to Chad Henne as checkdown Chad sometimes, right? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, that's what this question is about. And we talked about Blake driving the ball down the field. Is it simply a case of quarterbacks with more limited upside maybe go for those safer throws? What is it about Henne, or is this a false statement?
I mean, both. Type of quarterbacks utilize the check down.
Sure.
You know, the elite quarterbacks use the check down when it's necessary. The carry the bag quarterback, who's carrying the bag for another guy to take his place eventually, typically is the guy that relies more on the check down.
One read, check it down if it's not there.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, whereas you hear the term throw a guy open sometimes in the NFL. Throw a guy open means is that he's not open, but if you put it in a place, he's going to be open when the ball arrives. You know, and elite quarterbacks have that ability. The quarterbacks that are not elite can't see that throw open opportunity and then check it down. So, and I think that Blake is one of those guys who's a throw open quarterback and not going to be a check down quarterback
because
unless
he has
to.
Because as soon as he sees that, he's going to take that shot.
Sure.
At least at this
point. What we've seen.
And you should, I mean, don't you want to encourage that too as in your quarterback? Almost, if you're going to make the mistakes early in your career, shouldn't they be mistakes of aggression?
Well, how many interceptions did Peyton Manning have?
He threw like 26.
That happens. And that's why, you know, when I saw the two near interceptions in the 2-minute drill, I'm sitting there saying to myself, that's okay. And it's okay because I like the way that he's trying to be aggressive, that
right.
He's trying to make things happen, that he's trying to push the ball down the field, and especially in a 2-minute drill.
Another question on Twitter, again from Eric Soriano, said, what about Tyson Alualu? He's played well this preseason. Has he reached his ceiling, or could he still be, as Eric put it, the Pro Bowl caliber player he was drafted to be? First of all, is it fair to, if you're drafting the top 10, to consider that the expectation is a Pro Bowl or multiple Pro Bowls in your career?
I think the fans would like to see that, and that a top 10 player has the opportunity to become a Pro Bowl player. But the Pro Bowl determination is also a lot of different factors that sometimes can be popularity, market that you play in, et cetera. I mean, you have a hell of a lot better chance of making the Pro Bowl if you play in New York than compared to playing in Jacksonville.
Sure,
but that's not the determining
factor. Right, but we can recognize that Fred Taylor, there are many years that he may have been a worthy Pro Bowler, and didn't get it, versus clearly Alawal has not been in that category. It's not the market size that's holding him back.
No,
where do you see him right now in his career?
Probably playing better than Red Bryant.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, just so far in three preseason games, he's probably played a little bit better than Red. A little more consistent. Now, when you see Red have a good play, Red's good plays
are dominant. Yeah.
But consistency, Tyson has been a little bit better. And I see Red make plays to where I want to see his movement and his discipline get a little bit better. And I think the movement thing, you know, you can see that Red's a big man. I mean, it's obvious, right? I mean, I think he was probably 340 pounds.
Yeah, he's massive.
And I think that he's starting to trim that down a little bit, starting to work towards the regular season to where he moves a little bit better. So I expect his performance to get better and that consistency to get better. But right now, so far, Tyson Alualu has had a fantastic training camp. He's been extremely solid and has been more consistent than Red. But I expect Red, his ceiling in the regular season, to be higher than Tyson.
And he's a veteran, and I would assume that he's probably done this before.
He's a leader.
He's always been a big guy. He probably has worked his way up to the regular season.
Right. It's not like he's trying to make the Pro Bowl in the preseason. You know, but I like Red because he's a strong leader. When Red talks, people listen. You know, when Red called the team up, I guarantee you there wasn't anybody else talking when Red was talking. He commands that presence, and that's exactly what you want.
Send Derek Marks goes out of the game, and hopefully it's not going to be that big of a deal, but if they were to miss him for any regular season time, how impactful would that be, you know, for a one- or two-game scenario to not be with Send Derek Marks?
Well, I think it would hurt. He's a very good player, very good against the run. He's got great athleticism. I mean, Sendark Marks has athletic strength and balance that you just don't see very often. Is he ever going to be a Pro Bowl type of player? Probably not. But he does some things exceptionally well, and he's a very good football player. Now, if he's not available, then all of a sudden you're saying, okay, well, Ziggy Hood's got to be our guy. Is Ziggy Hood shown you enough to where you could say, okay, well, he's competing for Sendark for that starting role? No. You know, has he been okay? Yeah, he's been okay. Has he been that $4.5-5 million a year type of guy that maybe your expectations are with that type of pay? Probably not. But he's a good, solid backup, and you'd feel that you could be okay with him.
Okay, but there's clearly a drop-off.
Absolutely.
This one from Scott. At Mr. Mathis 7, he said, with the emergence of the tight end being such a formidable weapon in passing games around the league, are the Jaguars linebackers athletic enough to cover the tight ends in this league?
You know, we had Telvin Smith on the TV show last night. We know he's fast, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what he was clocked at?
His 40 time?
Yeah.
Tell me.
4.39. 4.39.
That's pretty good.
So do you think he's fast enough to cover some of the athletic tight ends?
I think he's certainly athletic enough to do it as well.
And fast enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hey, look, he can play. Paul Posluszny is a Pro Bowl caliber linebacker. Telvin Smith is the other starting nickel linebacker. And then if either one of those two can't play, JT Thomas had a marvelous game last week against the Detroit Lions. Was probably the best linebacker on the field.
Has Posluszny gotten significantly better in any area since he joined the team? I'm not asking that sarcastically.
Coverage.
Has he? Because
yes.
That was the knock when he came here. That the rep with Buffalo fans when they signed, he said, "Oh, just wait and see. The first tight end he covers will be the next will be the first." That kind of thing. But I thought he certainly made plays in coverage. I see him getting his hands on balls in practices out here.
The biggest thing is that how many balls don't go towards the guy he's covering. You know, I mean, that to me is a huge indicator of how successful and good a linebacker is. You know, and Paul has developed, can continue to develop. Nobody that I have ever watched in 25 years of in or watching or part of the NFL, have I ever seen anybody with a work ethic like Paul Posluszny. Nobody.
That's saying something.
Nobody. And I played with Ronnie Lott, Art Monk, Leonard Marshall, Boomer Esiason. I mean, some guys that are top tier Hall of Famers. And I've never seen anybody work like Paul Posluszny.
How about that? That's a pretty ringing endorsement right there. All right, we'll take a time out here, come back, take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you, Jaguar fans, after watching what you've seen so far the preseason, have your expectations changed, good or bad, in either direction in terms of the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2014? You can post on the Facebook page, Jaguars Today on the Facebook page. Of course, you can tweet at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. More questions for Loggy as well on a Going to School Tuesday with Jeff Logman, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, coming back here on Jaguars Today, Billy Joel Stiletto. I know Billy Joel's a New Yorker, Tony, so.
I've heard that he's got plans to build a house in Philadelphia.
Is that right? I think, well, I think what they're saying is if you wear the wrong jersey to an Eagles game, they're liable to pull a stiletto out on you and maybe stab you. So is that the theme?
This might be more fun than the music theme, is you guys twisting the music theme.
Is that,
I'm impressed.
You can't figure it out otherwise. There's been a lot of things about shoes and stilettos, which I guess are a kind of heel.
Is she being self-promoting?
She is. Self-serving, self-promoting, narcissistic.
Lauren would not do that.
All of those
wouldn't do
that. There's no doubt. This is about helmets and heels.
It's just helmets and heels! Oh, why didn't I figure that out tonight at 7 o'clock?
And I know all three of you will be there.
Where are you going to be? I'm working tonight. I got my own.
You get off at 7.
In the afternoon. I'll be at my house in St. Augustine at that moment. So why don't you come to my house for my show and make it to your remote?
That sounds lovely. Like a lot of
sure
driving.
Jackson Social?
Jackson Social on Beach Boulevard, just east of the Intercoastal. 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and we'll have Denard Robinson, Jordan Todman. They're going to be playing a fun game that we created for them, and it's going to be a blast.
Like a newlywed game, even though they're not.
Something kind of like that, exactly.
Like, how well do you know your teammate, right?
That's exactly it. Yep. Who knows who better?
That? ESPN the Magazine does that, right? They do something very similar like that. They take someone's spouse and their teammate, and they try to determine who knows
whom better. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it, but I'm not wearing stilettos, just for the record.
You're not?
No. There's going to be a lot of...
Joel is.
Are you wearing your Wes Welker concussion helmet? You've got to wear some special helmet or special heels.
Someone call my new hair color close to a helmet, so...
Have I not seen your new hair?
No, you haven't seen it yet. Nope.
Well, I'm coming over today after the show for the web.com fantasy forecast.
It'll debut for you then. Yeah, I came out to practice on Sunday. And some, a few people saw it, and that's when Osier said, "Did you take the hair dye challenge?"
Oh no!
Yeah, a lot of people do not like it.
A little appearance smack, and he had no lot of room to work there on that score. But all right, I can't wait to see this. let's go on the international. What do they call those cables that they used to lay across the bottom of the ocean? Transatlantic cable line.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, and welcome Christoph on board here from the UK. What's up, brother? How are you?
I'm good. You guys?
What's going on? We got you, man.
I've just got a question for Jeff, obviously. How does he feel about the pass rushers behind Chris Clemens? You know, the rest of the Leos, and especially the rushing linebackers or auto backers, you know. I can take the answer off the air if you want.
You got it, bro. We appreciate the call, man.
Yeah, I like the package that they have, the lightning package. I think each guy brings kind of a unique set of abilities. Ryan Davis has the ability to not only be an outside rusher, but also that interior pass rusher. And he's not a big guy, but he's got athletic strength, which Andre Branch doesn't have that. But Andre Branch has athletic speed. So it's neat in that each guy offers you a little bit of something different. Clemens being, I think, the best of the bunch, clearly, hands down.
I thought Branch, though, obviously made the eye-popping play when you drop almost 30 yards in coverage and make that interception.
You know, that was a busted play,
right?
It was
big. Busted by whom? By him? Was he in the wrong spot? Yeah. It still made a play. I will tell us, give us a scoop, how that all go down.
How often are you supposed to have two defensive ends lined up on the same side?
I'm guessing not very.
So he just took off?
Yeah. You had, and I don't know this for sure, but I'm pretty sure. Red Bryan and Andre Branch lined up on the same side, and then the nickel lined up, I think, on the other side, and they were supposed to be flip-flopped. And so Brancher just, drops back into coverage and then actually does the smart thing. He turns back and looks at Matt Stafford's eye, sees Calvin Johnson cutting across and makes a play. But I don't think
You don't think they had him intending to drop back 30 yards on some kind of...
Well, he was supposed to drop.
Okay.
But he was supposed to be on the other side
on the other side of the field.
But they adapted.
Instinctive player he is,
adapted
Tony.
And adjusted.
he snipped that one out of the line of scrimmage.
They got it done.
That was a pre-snap read by the
Brancher. Yes, and Derek Marks said they're going to hear about that one for 2 days in the meeting room. Like hell. 2 months, 2 years.
But other than that, I thought he had a couple of occasions where he flushed or helped flush.
See, that's what he's got.
Stafford from the pocket.
Yeah, because he's got speed. He's got great effort. He's got excellent speed. Ryan Davis has great effort, great athletic strength. The guy that I think is going to be the odd man out is Chris Smith. I mean, how are you going to, I mean, he's probably going to make the football team. I mean, he showed some things.
Just won't get many reps.
How are you going to get him active on game day?
Sure.
Who are you going to put down?
But that's okay. I mean, but he is, I don't think Chris Smith is disappointed where they drafted him.
No.
He's shown his own flash.
Sixth round pick.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't expect the sixth round pick to come in and immediately be a starter, but they may have one in Luke Boyko.
Right. And now, is that a hit, or is that how much of that is a hit? How much of that is a combination of it's really a weak position for the Jacksonville Jaguars? And I got to ask
about
the
center position.
Center, yes. Ryan O'Halloran characterized Mike Brewster as a huge swing and the miss by Dave Caldwell. I gave him that look that you're giving me right now.
How's that a swing and a miss?
They didn't even take a swing. He was an undrafted free agent.
Here.
Right. Well, right. But I guess he said, you know, if you. You could have offered Alex Mack $40 million. Well, they offered him a record contract for a center. They clearly were trying to upgrade the position. And then after that, you can't fix everything throughout the course of one, you know, draft.
No, and they've got some guy. I mean, hey, look, you can get by for a while, you know, with a guy that's okay. But I really believe that the ceiling is higher with Boyko than it is either of the other two in Jock McClendon and Mike Brewster. I think we've seen what Mike Brewster is going to be. I mean, I don't think that in 2 years from now, Mike Brewster all of a sudden gets stronger in the weight room and can start blocking a shade of nose tackle
right.
off of the ball. I mean, that's just not going to happen. I think Luke Boyko is a guy that has an opportunity to develop into something good. I think clearly that Brandon Linder could play that position and be your best option right now, physically. Jock McClendon would probably be just, let's just get through this year with him, and then we'll find a guy. You know, so
wouldn't you think you're going to see Boyko at center on Thursday because McClendon's probably going to fill in for Beatles, right?
Yeah. So it's good.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, and I give Boyko a lot of credit. And I mean, look, I'm not trying to give the guy credit or pumping up because he went to Virginia, you know, but I mean, it clearly helps. He's a smart guy.
Okay.
No, but I mean,
so apparently some of them who come from Virginia are, Tony.
I can honestly tell you not all of them that went through there were. We got a few of them that we're not real proud of.
No, I hear you, though. It's, in all seriousness, I mean, he was like, you know,
he's shown good, though.
Right. No, he has, but he was the nondescript guy at the end of the draft that, you know.
You didn't even get invited to combine.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty remarkable now. And a guy that was a swing guy between guard and center, but they clearly identified something that when he was at center, he was pretty good. And so I give the Jaguar scouting staff some credit for kind of sticking, and I don't say you don't ever stick your neck out on a six-round pick.
Sure.
But you do in some sense in that you're using a draft pick for a guy that maybe you could have gotten undrafted, and they felt obviously strongly enough about him that they had to use a draft pick to get him and not to try to fight for him in the free agent process.
Tom Butch Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking fans what drives you on a daily basis. Today we ask you, what about expectations? Have they changed at all based on the preseason, Tony? What are they saying?
Here we got from Tony, no, I still think Jags go 4-12, but are more competitive. Offensive line is terrible. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Stevie, no, still reckon we'll be more competitive, though not necessarily more successful. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Ben, expectations for the season, no. Still between 5-7 wins. For Bortles, yes, he is impressed more than expected. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Eric, not really. I had them at 7-9 to 9-7 before the preseason. Their play solidifies it. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Bold City Bortles, defense looks faster than I thought. May keep games close. Gerhardt, not as effective as I thought. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Kevin, nope, I still have the same view as I did before. Good free agent moves and draft equals better product. Hashtag Jaguars today. From The Dude, honestly, I expect no less than 8 wins regardless of who the quarterback is week 1. Arrows pointing up. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Josh, B5 Bomber will start sooner than I expected. Defense looks better. We have a slight chance for the division. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag Dave Gus 2014 from Doug. Nope, expectation is always Super Bowl. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag maybe not.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Sad face. From Christoph, who we just heard from on the phones. No, we're still rebuilding dynasties. We're not built in two seasons. Just hope no blowouts.
All right, a couple of quick ones here from Josh Richburg on Facebook. I expect improvement regardless of record. The preseason has only shown me proof that Gus and the staff have made an impact on the young team, and they are, quote, getting better. The future's bright. Hashtag Jaguars today. And from Devin Zook, my expectation has gone from no expectations to being in games at the 50-minute mark. I don't think we'll be blown out like last year every game, Jeff, which I think that is one way certainly we're going to mark improvement, the quality of how competitive they are. They may still lose a number of games, but will they be in those games? I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it. The 50-minute mark, are we still in more of these football games?
I mean, to me, that's what it's all about. You know, give yourself a chance in the fourth quarter to have an opportunity at winning a football game. I mean, last year, the first 8 weeks of the season, painful, bro.
Awful.
Painful.
I mean, double digits. I mean, arguably, again, we keep saying it, but arguably the first worst first half of football that any NFL team has ever had.
And I think that they knew that it was going to be a rough road, but they didn't think that.
That was pretty bad. Tom Bush Family Dealerships, of course, includes Tom Bush BMW. Right now, you can take advantage of the Certified Edge sales event going on for the remainder of August and all of September. Enjoy 1.9% APR and up to $1,500 credit on many 2011 and 2012 certified pre-owned BMWs. That's part of the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Visit them at TomBush.com and learn more at Tom Bush Motors on Twitter as well. By the way, Lauren said when you were hyping up the intelligence of the typical Virginia grad, so that sounded like it was venturing dangerously into the self-promoting territory. So
no, trust me. I used to be, you know, but then after a lot of hits to the head, the intelligence factor goes down.
Well, it would take Lauren to recognize a fellow self-promoter as well as she gets the job
done. I'm
getting
thrown under the shoes today.
A little bit, but that's okay. I mean, just... You're just one of the guys.
Exactly.
Because we do it to everybody else, too. Why should you be any exception?
I'm not, trust me. Although, Jeff, I will say, you sound very intelligent on football.
Well, good. That means I got everybody fooled.
Let's go to Darren before we wrap up today at 641-1010. Good morning, Darren. How are you?
I'm doing good, fellas. How you guys doing?
Good, thanks.
Awesome, man. I just have a quick question for you gentlemen. I know the talk has been about Blake Bortles and starting him, you know, basically over Henny. And I just want to kind of beat that drum just a little bit. I want to ask you guys personal opinion, professional opinion even, because I think, you know, Gus and Dave, they had to have asked a question when they drafted Blake. What if, you know, just what if he comes in and he's playing, you know, like, Russell Wilson, you know, I mean, although they said that he will not start, they had to have asked that question. What if he's actually playing to that level? And because Gus and Dave, they seem to be very honest and very transparent. I think the issue here is that because they've already said Henny will start, how do you come back and, I guess, maintain your integrity and say now?
No. They're not trying to save face or maintain integrity. That has nothing to do with this. If you go back to the Seattle situation, Russell Wilson didn't have Chad Henne on the roster. Who did he have?
Yeah, Matt Flynn, who they paid money to, but he wasn't playing well.
It was terrible.
Right.
You know, so you're dealing with a completely different set of circumstances. And Darren, I don't want you for a minute to think that Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell are ever trying to save face. They're not doing anything like that. They're trying to make the best decision for the future of this franchise at the quarterback position. Has nothing to do with personal opinion.
Would you play Chad Henne on Thursday? If it were Jeff Ogden making the call.
Yeah.
And how much? And
the reason why I'd play him is that, you know, they need to work together. And I'm talking the wide receivers and Chad Henne and an offensive line that, yeah, will have a couple pieces missing, but he needs to play, and so does Blake Bortles.
You play X amount of snaps, you play him X amount of series. I mean, what
quarter,
if he goes three and out?
Quarter.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, quarter. Play Chad a quarter, you know, and then
and you leave the line always, in to protect those
snaps
guys.
Are always a consideration when you play.
Right, if you have one long drive, maybe that's fine. Right, if you have like an 8 or 10 or 12 play drive.
I want two drives then. If you got one long drive, I want another.
Do you
drive.
Want it, but is there something to be said for leaving on a high note and having that be the final feeling you have
no,
going into the season?
It's about reps. It's about reps.
Okay.
I'm not worried about high notes. I'm worried about reps. I'm worried about repetitions for them to get ready for Philadelphia. I mean, look, now they may not play anybody, but I would be surprised if they didn't. This football team needs reps.
We'll find out today. Gus is, I think, going to weigh out the plan.
Gus talked about a race to maturity.
Right.
Well, a race to maturity is to develop what you got. They need to develop some of what they got.
Love him. We give him a hard time, but we know Logman is a football savant, ladies and gentlemen, at least from my standpoint over here. Love listening to you after you break down the film every week. And 2 weeks from now, we'll be talking about the real thing, which is nice.
Yeah,
as
which is great, you know, and I'll obviously have a lot to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles at that point. I've watched them a little bit already, but we'll watch a lot more in the coming weeks.
Especially after today's music theme, you know, being that it was Philadelphia Eagles-centric. So
things you didn't even
know
about
Philadelphia. That puts them right there on your mind. All right, Logs, good to see you, buddy. We'll see you again next Tuesday.
All right, thank you, Mike.
There he goes, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony. That does it for me, for Joe Fortunato, for Lauren Brooks. The boys of XL Primetime are coming up, so don't go anywhere. They're next. That does it for Jaguars Today on 1010XL. 92.5 FM.